Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 108. And like I said, last week, we are going to start flipping these. Tony starts practice tomorrow. And, you know, so it's just easier for him to do this on Sundays at some point. On the seventh day, he rests, except for the coaching staff podcast. So, Mr. Viss, how are you feeling on the eve of the start of practice?
Kind of like a kid on Christmas Eve, you know, getting ready to open up all those presents in the morning. I'm pumped up for it. Probably, you know, about as pumped up as I've been, you know, I love basketball. When it gets to that night before, I'll probably have a little bit of trouble sleeping tonight and be just juiced and ready to go tomorrow. And then after that, after you kind of take that initial, you know, awe away from it, it's kind of getting to that grind, getting that routine. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can string six good practices together this week, but we got to start it off with a good one tomorrow.
Yeah, that's all you can do. So episode 108. Tony, we literally have a murderer's row of uniform number eights, especially in baseball. Listen to this. Cal Ripken Jr., Carl Yastrzemski, Yogi Berra, Willie Stargell, Joe Morgan, Andre Dawson, the Hawk. Hi, everybody. It's Andre Dawson in right field. Gary Carter, also the kid, Gary Carter. And that's just the, you know, we got a hockey player, Alex Ovechkin.
Troy, he's not bad.
Yeah. Troy Aikman, Lamar Jackson, and the punter, Ray Guy, all uniform number eights. This is, yeah, that's a heck of a run there.
That's one of, if not the best number with those. I mean, baseball alone, I mean, I have to move some guys around, but you might win some games with those baseball players.
Well, you know, you got Ripken at short, Yastrzemski in left, Yogi Berra at catcher, Willie Stargell at first, Joe Morgan at second base, Gary Carter, we might have to put him like a designated hitter. Yeah, DH. We got Andre Dawson in right field. So the only thing we're missing is center field. Well, hard to find a pitcher with a uniform number 8.
Yeah.
But as far as position players, center field and third base, and we've got a pretty salty crew here, Tony. That's going to win you some games.
Yeah, you might win your division.
Yeah, you might. So I've got 4 basketball players, Tony. All of them retired. See what you got, man.
I know Kobe at one time was 8. I don't know if you did the 8-24 thing. So
definitely an 8.
Yep. Okay. Was Antoine Walker, did he wear 8 with the Celtics?
He did. I did not include him on the list. I didn't put him on the list.
He had a pretty snobby list.
Yeah.
Man.
These other 3 might be a little bit hard. Walt Bellamy, former center, mainly for the Hawks. Eddie Johnson, a great sixth man for the Phoenix Suns. Yep. And I think he was with the Supersonics for a while as well. And then Latrell Sprewell, he was a uniform number 8 as well. So still some pretty good ball players there for basketball.
Not bad.
So
not as good as the baseball, but not bad.
Yeah. That baseball run is, I mean, that's like you said, that's about as good as we've had it. So so episode number 108. And Tony and I thought, especially with the start of practice, and we've kind of geared a lot of our last discussions on the start of practice and things you should be thinking about. What are some questions that you need to answer early in the season? Was the soup du jour, the soup of the day, we thought we'd jump in here today. And I've got, you know, my usual 8 or 9 bullet points here. I'm sure Tony's got some great stuff. I can get this started here this week if it's all right with you, Tony.
And
I kind of phrased mine in the form of questions here. So it's a little Alex Trebek Jeopardy. So first thing I thought of, and this is pretty obvious, what are your roles? Well, what are your roles? What roles are we going to have filled here? And oftentimes we think of that with our players, and that's the most obvious thing that we think of. But what are going to be the roles that our staff has? What roles do our managers have as you move forward? Who can you really trust when it comes to your managers with certain things? And who can you not trust? Who can you be dependable? You know, all those different things. And so I think that's high on the list. And it's just like with everything, Tony, you think you know what it's going to be, and then 99.9% of the time, those things are going to evolve as the season moves on. But I think that's one of the key early questions you have to answer.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you got to have some organization behind it, and you know, it's one of those things where many hands make light work, and mm-hmm. so you want to have those things planned out. And like you mentioned, you got to have it figured out who you can count on and who you can't count on. Both on and off the court. Mm-hmm. And so I think those are a great one to start with. Like, what is each one going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, both from a staff standpoint, manager standpoint, player standpoint, all that stuff. And just make sure that everything has been checked off. And you know who you can count on. You know what you're going, where you're going, and how you're going to get there.
Yeah. And, you know, like with the manager, you know, might not think, well, managers, what role? Well, who can you really trust to be good passers, consistent passers, when you need a passer for a shooting drill or what, you know, whatever it may be? Who can we count on that can really knows what they're doing with running the clock? You know, all those different things. I it's going to make your practice run so much smoother in that regard. So that was my first salvo. Tony, what do you got?
Yeah, I would go, instead of roles, I'll go with the one that rhymes with it, and that would be goals. You know, mm-hmm. what are your goals? And one of the things I think that's important to kind of keep in mind with goals is, if you make it just about wins and losses, you miss out on so many things. Because I think we've talked about this before, is the fact that athletics can teach so many life lessons. And so hopefully, you know, you look at it as your sport as in addition to the classroom, not separate from the classroom. And there are so many different ways that you can reach those goals. And so, you know, some of the things for your players might be to be the best teammate possible. you know, as for a coach, your goal might be to help your players have the best experience possible. But I think those are some things that you want to sit down, you want to think about. What are your goals? And along those lines, with those goals, what are your plans? What's your plan in place to make sure that those goals are achievable and measurable and all those good things? You know, you've heard the SMART goal stuff before, but I think those are important, you know, and it's not just about statistics and wins and losses and stuff like that. It's about an experience. And so I think when you sit down and you take a look at those goals, those are some things. And then the other thing too with your goals, make sure you have them where you can see them on a consistent basis. Don't just have some, you know, spend a couple minutes before the season begins and you know, randomly say a couple, two, three things. You know, write them down. And then, like I said, come up with a plan and then post them somewhere so you can see them. And I think that's just a good, healthy reminder of what you're playing for, your why, if you will.
Yeah, and I think sometimes the hardest thing when it comes to goals that causes frustration for us as coaches is our goals may not jive with some of our players' goals. Like you said, you know, some players might just be, I just want to have fun with my friends. And you're like, I want to win a district championship or I want to get to a state tournament. That's my goal. Those are two goals that are pretty much polar opposite in a lot of different ways, you know, not to say that that player doesn't want to win when it comes down to competing. But I think that it's important that if you are going to be a coach that asks players about their goals, has them write down their goals, that in some ways you need to be aware of their goals. So if you're freaking out on Billy and Billy's like, hey, Coach Viss, I'm just here to have a good time. I mean, you know, and I'm not, I don't, you know what I mean is, yeah. You know, winning a district championship. Yeah, it would be great, but I have a bigger goal than that in my eyes. And my eyes is just, you know, having a great experience or whatever. You know, I think it's important that you know where Billy is coming from. And if Billy's having a great experience, then he will help us win a district championship. But if it's all about winning the district championship and that's all you care about, Billy's not going to be engaged with you. And I think it's important to have those type of conversations, if you're so inclined. That's my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's big, because one of the things that's important as a coach is to figure out what does drive your kids. What are they there for? What's their why? And if you're going to be, you know, with your kids and know how to properly motivate them and guide them and stuff like that, you have to have those conversations so that, you know, you understand what their goals are, what they're here for, what you know, what's their reasoning. And so that way you know how to best coach them.
My next one would be, and I put these in no particular order, Tony. I guess I'll pick up on goals. What are your standards and do you enforce them? I'm not a big rules guy. We had very few rules. You know, be on time, be a great teammate. A couple other things, I don't remember them off the top of my head. I know I've got them written down. Not a lot of rules, but really, really high standards. And we talked about the standards of play. And then do you enforce them? I think that if you're going to have high standards, but you don't enforce high standards, and then all of a sudden you flip out because you haven't had good standards for a week, and then all of a sudden on the sixth day, you're like, why are we not doing it? No, I mean, once you see that slippage, I think that's one of the things that I really got much, much better at enforcing high standards without having it being a you know, I got to feel like I got to yell, kick, and scream to enforce the standards that I want to see achieved by our players, you know. And so what are your standards and do you enforce them? I think are two really important questions that you need to ask early in the season as well.
Yeah, because if you're not enforcing them, they're not standards, they're suggestions.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's something to kind of keep in mind as the head coach. You know, if you have these standards, then you need to enforce them. Otherwise, they're not a standard. You have suggestions or preferences, if you will. You know, the other thing I think that's kind of fun in that area too is that rather than you having to be the one who does it all the time, is when your players begin to, hey, that's not how we do that here.
Yeah.
And I think that's when you really got something special.
Agreed. What's your next one?
Yeah, my next one is, you know, and this is something that you have to have a plan going in, but what are your team's strengths and weaknesses? And I think that's something that's been a process that you've been working through. You know, if you have a healthy summer program where you're going a couple months, you're going several times a week, and you get into the fall, you do some open gym stuff. I mean, you're starting to figure those things out. You know, you have to have a playing style, if you will. And the one thing that's kind of fun about high school is that you know, you can adjust because, you know, it's not like college where you recruit a certain style, a certain type of athlete that comes into your system.
Yep.
You have to make your system fit the athlete. And so it's important as a high school coach that you have those things in mind as you go into it. What are your players? What are your team's strengths and weaknesses? And you want to make sure that the style fits what you have. And then you go through there and you find the weaknesses. What's your plan to help them improve those areas? And then the other thing too, with the strengths, does your system fit what their strengths are? Because I think that's important as well, is the fact that you have to have a system that's adaptable and flexible that fits your team's strengths and stuff. And so I think that's got to be something as you go into the season, you've done a lot of legwork, a lot of homework on. So when you hit the ground running that first day, that first week, you've got a plan in place. Because if you fail to plan, you're basically planning to fail.
Mm-hmm. And like with everything, those things will evolve as the season goes along. Mm-hmm. There may be things that end up being strengths that on November 15th, you didn't realize were going to be strengths for you. And the same thing with your weaknesses. And I believe that just like with so many things that we're probably going to talk about here today, it's an evolution, but it's questions that you need to ask.
Yes. Yes, because, you know, it's one of those things where you have some thoughts going in, but as you go, you have to have a plan that's flexible that can tweak and adjust as you go through the season and begin to add in more and you know, put your team in a situation where they're going to grow and develop and improve throughout the season.
Mm-hmm. Folks, if you are looking for a good book, guess what? I have got something for you. Kings of Their Court, 3 Teams, 1 City, and the Greatest Basketball Season in Nebraska High School History is available today on Amazon.com. It is the story of Tim Cannon at Millard North, Josh Ludke at Creighton Prep, and Doug Woodard at Bellevue West, and the 3 teams that they had during the 2021 season, the chaos that everybody was living through. The story literally picks up with the outbreak of COVID in March of 2020, and it carries through for the next 365 days. Everything that these players, these parents, these coaches that they went through from COVID quarantines to George Floyd to the politics of the time to just trying to get the season in a somewhat normal fashion with these 3 teams from this one city that were ranked in the top 25 in the country. Now, think about that. That would be hard to do in a New York and a Los Angeles. We had that here in Omaha, Nebraska. It is a terrific, terrific book. Of course, I'm a little biased because I'm the one that wrote it, but I think that if you're a basketball person or if you like a good sports story, a very amateurish version of Friday Night Lights for basketball, this is the type of story that you're really, really going to enjoy. So go to Amazon.com, go to books, type in Kings of Their Court, and it's going to take you right there to it. It's $19.99 for the paperback, $9.99 for the Kindle version. Folks, check it out. I think it's a really, really great story, and I don't think you're going to regret picking up a copy of Kings of Their Court. Here's my next one, Tony. Are you working on special situations? Are you working on special situations? Now, I think early in the season, you have so many things that you have to worry about. You have to implement the offense. You have to implement the defense. And some of that, you know, can be picked up upon, you know, especially like if you're in a situation with like John's been at, you know, Kennedy for a long time. So there's probably just slight tweaks, but the majority of the system is put into place. And now it's just, let's kind of pick this up. Okay, this is how we need to do this. This is how we need to do this. And especially in our situation where in high school, you only have sometimes 12, 13, maybe if you're lucky, 14 practices before your first game. So that's hard to work a lot on special situations. But you do need to try and mix that in when you can. Maybe it's formal. Maybe sometimes it's not formal. You're playing a scrimmage and he's like, okay, hey, 10 seconds left, ball out on the side. We need to do this here or whatever it may be. You know, I saw something play out today. We went to the Nebraska St. Mary's men's game up in Sioux Falls today. We went to the women's game last night and St. Mary's hit 2 free throws to go up 3 with 5.5 seconds left to go, and Nebraska had to go the full court. And you know, was talking with my sons, and I was like, are they going to foul? Would you foul? And they're like, well, yeah, we'd foul. And my buddy Meyer agreed with me they should foul. They didn't foul. And I don't know if they didn't work on it or if they just trusted their defense or whatever it may be. But if you can have a chance to work those special situations in, highly, highly encourage you to do that early on in the season.
Yeah, and I know a lot of times coaches, you know, they got so much stuff to put in early. And it's one of those things where, you know, you kind of don't know how they're going to handle certain things until they get in those situations. You see it, and then you can add it to your practices as you go. And it's probably one of those things where as the season progresses, you begin to work a lot more on situations. But I'm telling you, one of the big things with the shot clock is you better have some of those things talked about and worked on, because the shot clock does change those things. And So it's a situation, hey, 10 seconds left on the shot clock, you know, they've defended you well for, you know, however long your shot clock is, 35 seconds or whatever. What's your go-to when you got to get that shot up, you know, as the clock begins to wind under 10? And so those are important things to keep in mind, that you do need to make sure that you've put some time in going in and out of bounds plays. You know, if there's, you know, 3 seconds on the shot clock, again, on an out-of-bounds play, you have to be aware of that. What's your go-to out-of-bounds play that's a quick one that you can get up there? Because some take a little bit longer to develop than 3 seconds. And so just some things to kind of think through there a little bit early on in the season.
Mm-hmm. What's your next one, buddy?
You know, another one that I think that you got to keep in mind too is how will you disseminate information to your team? Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that's been kind of nice is I think Google Classroom has really helped out a lot. And so we put a lot of our stuff in our Google Classroom. And so it's been up for a while. Most of our kids have, you know, accepted their invitation to it. It'll give you analytics and statistics and stuff with them, how many have looked at it and so on and so forth. But I think that's something to kind of keep in mind is, how are you going to disseminate that information in terms of, you know, getting that to them? How are you going to disseminate information to them as well? You know, something changes during the day, you know, as far as, you know, practice time or whatever the case may be. But those are things I think you have to think through going in, so that as you're getting ready, that they've got a little bit of a leg up. So when you call out a set, you know, you expect to run it perfectly the first time, but those that have been around a little bit in the summer and then looked in the Google Classroom and stuff, you can tell who's studious and who's been putting the time, and they're going to stand out early on that they are prepared and ready to go.
Yep. You know, that's, you know, just that communication piece and having that in place. That's so big, you know, it just the efficiency of it, right, Tony? You know, just to, you know, and it's so much different than back in the day, you know, when we were playing, you know, if something, right, it was the old telephone chain or whatever it may be, you know, and now it's an email, it's a Google Classroom, it's a text, there's an app, you know, there's an app for that. And it's just, you know, mind blowing how far we've come, I guess.
Yes. I mean, it's crazy how quickly you can get in touch with them and get some of that information out that used to be like a huge monkey wrench that would be thrown in there that could really kind of mess things up.
Mm-hmm. Here's my next one, Tony. Who are your leaders? That's a question that you need to be asking. And along with that question, Tony, very much directly related to that question, who are your leaders? And then, are they the right leaders? Because there are times, especially at the high school level, you can have the wrong leaders in your locker room. You can have the wrong personality or personalities that are the center pivot to your locker room. And so one of the things I really learned, and it took me a lot of hard lessons along the way, but especially when I was up at Fort Calhoun, one of the things I really worked on in my the couple of years that I took off there was, you know, you have to, you just can't have seniors walk in and say, okay, you're seniors, you lead. You know, you have to train them. And one of the things that we really tried to do to the best of our ability is we tried to train leadership from the time that they were a freshman. And here's our standards. Here's how we're going to communicate. Here's how we're going to do this. And we had everybody involved in that process. And so in the hopes of that we would have the right leaders in place, not the wrong leaders, because I've had situations, and if you've done this long enough, you can have the wrong leaders in the locker room, and that can make for a long season. And so when you do have those wrong leaders, you have the right leaders have their voices kind of trump the wrong leaders' voices. That was my next one.
Yeah, the wrong leaders can make your season really miserable. And Marty, like you talked about, you know, leaders are made, not born. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things, you know, as the coach and members of the staff that make that up, situation where you want to make sure that you're training them as they go along, you know, freshman to sophomore, junior, so on and so forth. And the other thing to kind of keep in mind too, just because somebody has a dominant personality doesn't mean that they are the right leader. Because I think that was one of the things that was key that you were talking about, is making sure that you have the right leader. And so something to kind of keep in mind as you get ready to think about those leaders is to maybe share with the team what you think the qualities of a leader are, and be very, very, you know, descriptive and direct with that. Because just because somebody's loud doesn't mm-hmm. mean that they're the right leader.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What else you got, buddy?
You know, another one, kind of that same way, you're talking about leaders, but, you know, the one thing I would also mention there is the importance of building relationships with your teammates and other coaches. And I think that's important, and that's got to be an intentional thing. And we've talked a little bit about this before. You know, one of the things that is important for the head coach before practice begins, you know, we do some dynamic stretching and form running type stuff, but mm-hmm. I'm out there. It's my time to kind of check in with them. It's not always serious stuff. Sometimes I just joke around with them. Mm-hmm. But I think that's important. And then, you know, make sure you use your bus ride time. You know, well, we go on bus trips. Sometimes it's hour and a half, whatever, you know, and I kind of leave them alone before the game. But after the game, you know, it's a good time to call them up wherever you're sitting and just have a quick conversation with them. And then after practice is always good too. You know, I've already got, you know, one of the days this week, it might even be a couple of days this week, I've got conversations set up to where, you know, I'm going to check in and begin that process. I want to make sure, you know, on a weekly basis, I'm having a conversation with everybody, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not just the starters. It's not just your rotation players. It's whatever. I want to make sure I'm having a conversation with everybody. And then the other thing too, you know, empower your other coaches to have those conversations and build that. I think, you know, it's kind mm-hmm. of the good cop, bad cop routine at times. Your assistant coaches can be huge assets for you, and make sure, you know, sometimes the players will be more real with them because, you know, they don't have to put on a mask, so to speak, and be the perfect whatever that they sometimes feel like they have to be with the head coach. Sometimes they can be real with the assistant coach, and the assistant coach oftentimes is closer in age to them. Yep. And then the other thing to keep in mind too, with that whole relationship piece as well, is that, hey, it's a long year. Yeah. You know, basketball's a long season. And there's going to be some conflict and disagreements and so on and so forth. You want to have a plan in place. When that happens, how are you going to deal with it? And mm-hmm. so just something else to kind of have filed in there as well, is that when those tough moments, when those difficult moments happen, what's your plan?
Yeah. And what do you have to lean back on? You know, if things start going sideways and you don't have those relationships, that's when things kind of go south in a hurry. And you're not going to, this was a hard lesson I had to learn, especially as a head coach. You are not going to click with every player, and even broader than that, you're not going to click with every class, the overall class. And, you know, my dad told me that, you know, you're not going to click with every single senior class in the same way that you did with this class or that class. There's going to be those ups and downs. And so the overall goal is to put the team in the best place that it can be at the end of the season. And if that means that your assistant coach or coaches have certain relationships with certain players that are better than the one that you have, but it's going to help put the team in the right place, you've got to allow your coaches to have that. Now, that coach and those players have to be loyal to you. They have to believe in the overall scheme of what you're trying to accomplish. You know, but I never really, as long as I felt like everybody was trying to row the boat in the same direction, I didn't care who they set by, as long as we were all rowing in the same direction. You're going to want to, excuse me, sit next to certain people and not sit next to certain people. And so I never really, I don't know about you, Tony, but I never really became jealous or upset or anything if it felt like an assistant coach was having had a better personal relationship with a player or two than I had. I think it's just humans being humans, and it never hurt, it never bothered me, because I felt like everybody was trying to reach the same place.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where as coaches, you want to pour into your players, and whether that's you doing it or whether that's an assistant coach doing it, you just want to make sure it's getting done. Mm-hmm. And sometimes assistant coaches are going to have better relationships with other players than what you are. And there are times when maybe you're struggling with that player, that's a great time to go to that resource. And if you sit there and kind of cut the assistant coaches off at the knees and don't let them develop that relationship, then when you come to that struggle point with that player, where are you going to have to go for a reference that maybe can give you some help that has some insight that you don't?
Mm-hmm. I've got two or three more. Here's my next one here, Tony. Are your drills multiple purpose drills? And I've said this before on the pod. I want to work both sides of the ball as much as possible. I don't want it, you know, I was never a big fan of just ball handling. I wanted ball handling to lead into finishing and shooting, to have it lead into communication or whatever it may be, you know, just as an example. Or I didn't really want a rebounding drill to just be a rebounding drill. I wanted it to be a rebound and movement drill, and let's outlet it, let's run the floor, you know, whatever it may be. I want our drills to be multi-purpose, if at all possible. Now, again, for me, the one exception to that rule was shooting. You know, if we just need to do a shooting drill, because shooting is the most important thing that we can do, and we need to get shots up. But I wanted to make sure, and even in our shooting drills, we wanted those to be multiple purpose drills, if at all possible. Sometimes you just got to shoot it just to shoot it. And I also understand sometimes you just have to have a passing drill just to have a passing drill, or you have to have a ball handling drill just to have a ball handling drill. I get that, but I'm talking the vast majority of the time you want to have those multiple purpose drills, multiple skill drills. You want to have it be competitive, constraints limited. You know, there's certain things that you want to have. My guy, Alex Sarama from Transforming Basketball, he's nodding in his head in agreement with the undefeated Cleveland Cavaliers right now. So, you know, that's another thing that I think you need to be asking yourself as you're going through your stuff.
Yeah, those same things is, you know, along with doing multiple purpose drills, is the fact that you want to have as many people busy in a practice as you possibly can. Now, don't get me wrong, there's going to be times when you have to play 5-on-5 and you've got the main court and the side hoops are, you know, kind of hanging out in the main court there a little bit, but you might just have 10 on the floor. But you want to make sure when you design a practice, you are keeping as many people busy as you possibly can, and that you're working on things, and that, you know, all six baskets, if you have six baskets, eight baskets, whatever in your gym, but you've got people busy, and you've got all baskets being utilized that you possibly can, and that they're working on many skills. I mean, one of the things that's been interesting this last week, there's a handful of girls basketball teams in Iowa that are not fielding teams this year.
Yeah.
And so Jeff Linder, who writes for the Gazette here, is doing an article on it coming up. And one of my buddies, Adam DeJudy, he put something out on X about his belief on it. It's very true. In basketball, if you're not good at something, they're going to expose it and they're going to find you. You know, if you can't guard, guess what? You're going to find that you've got, all of a sudden you're on the other team's best player, and they're going to that set about every single time. If you don't handle the ball well, they're going to press you. The next thing you know, the ball is in your hands. It's like, oh. And so you just want to make sure that in basketball, you are working on as many things as possible, because there's going to come a point in time when that's going to happen. That's going to present itself, and you've got to step up to the plate, so to speak, and make a play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're out there on an island, and when it goes bad, it goes bad pretty quickly. And that's hard for kids to kind of handle sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm. So, which is too bad. You don't want to embarrass anybody, but the game can humble you very, very quickly, you know? So,
yes.
Yeah. I got about two more things, Tony. What else you got?
I'm in that same boat. You know, you were talking earlier, Marty, about the skill side of it and, you know, the physical side of it. There's also the mental side of it too. And there's some things in terms of keeping in mind as you get ready, you know, are you going through visualization practices with your team? Do you have like a routine to help them? Because one of the things that kids struggle with sometimes is nerves before the game. And so with your pregame stuff, whether it's in the locker room or your pregame warm-up, what are some things that you have put into place to help kids get focused and be ready to go and maybe to be able to get rid of those nerves, so to speak? And then the other thing too is, you know, basketball is a long season. Like we said, there's going to be some ups, there's going to be some downs. When they get ready to go through those valleys, what are some things that you can help them out with? And then physically, it's a grind as well. What are things that you're going to put into place to help them to prioritize both resting and, you know, making sure that their muscles are stretched out properly? And how are they recovering after, you know, expending so much energy and burning thousands of calories every day? Mm-hmm. And so just some things to kind of keep in mind there as well, that it's not just always about the physical there. It's also the mental, and then also the rest and recovery from the physical as well. And if you can think through that, you know, you may be playing chess while everybody else is kind of playing checkers with that side of stuff too.
Especially if you feel like you've got a chance to make a real run at it. You're not going to win a state championship or win a state tournament berth on November 15th, but you could lose one. And you've got to have that plan to where you want to be able to peak around February 15th. That's when you really, really want to be hitting your stride. That's your late season play. That's your district play. You know, whatever it may be, whoever, you know, wherever you're listening, you know, adjust your calendar accordingly. But, you know, that kind of brings me to one of my last two things, Tony. It's like you were looking over my shoulder here. But, you know, where do you want to be at certain points of the season? Where do you want to be? Like I had written down, where do you want to be at the holiday break? But I personally, I would break up the season into four or five different parts. You know, beginning of the season to the first game, that was segment one. Then first game to the holiday break was, you know, the next segment of the season. And then for us in Nebraska, we had the holiday tournament to the conference tournament. And then the conference tournament to the end of the regular season and then the postseason. So there, you know, I think there was five segments that I divided that up there into, you know, and you know, I would always say, you know, within that, you know, from November 15th to December 15th, it's probably going to be a mess. And then December 15th to January 15th, we're going to start cleaning some stuff up. And then from January 15th to February 15th, that's when we really need to tighten things up. And that's where we really need to start hitting our stride. So we're playing our best ball at February 15th. And, you know, what is your plan to hit that stride, to pace yourself out? You don't, like we talked about, you don't want to go too big, too fast, too hard, too quickly, because you can lose it in that time. You're not going to win it during that time, but you can lose it. Now, that being said, you also, you know, again, you're establishing those standards that are going to set you up for February 15th. You're establishing those goals that are going to set you up for February 15th. You're establishing those relationships that are going to set you up for February 15th. But I think, you know, what is my plan for the overall season working its way backwards? I think that's something else you got to think about as well.
And I like that part. And I don't know if many people really think that way, Marty, is to go to the end and work your way backwards. And I think that is so very, very important. And, you know, it's one of those things, is there some science behind it? Yeah, I think there is some science behind it. But I think there's also an art to it with the feel. And as a, you know, like you like to say, a seasoned and experienced head coach, you know, how do I get that team playing its best ball at the right time? And that's, like I said, there is some science, but there also is an art. And sometimes those guys who are seasoned, experienced, do the right thing, the right adjustment, say the right word, whatever the case may be, at just the right time to get those teams peaking.
What else you got, bud?
Yeah, another one I was going to throw in there. I think we did a pod on this one not that long ago. How will I handle my role on the team? Yeah. And I think that's an important conversation to have. And, you know, we talked maybe about having that conversation at various times, because things evolve and change as we go. You know, it'll be interesting with our situation. Like, we start tomorrow, and two of my guys that would have been my two best players. They're going to be in practicing with the varsity early because there's been an injury on the varsity. So these two guys are going to get a look to see if they can step in and help fill a role in the varsity for a while. And so, you know, my talk might be a little bit different based on how soon or if those guys come back, but you have to be able to talk through those roles with your team, you know, whether that role is a starting role for people, mm-hmm. whether that role is coming off the bench and being a rotational piece, whether they are someone who comes in and locks down the opposing team's leading score. I mean, you have to do that. And then the other thing you have to have built in there too is a little bit of flexibility, a little bit of, because things are going to fluctuate and change. Let's say that, you know, I have this talk a couple weeks in the season, the two guys that went up come back down to me because the other guy's back and healthy now.
Yep.
That thing can change very, very quickly. And then the other thing that you also have to keep in mind too is how can you help your players stay positive and contribute if that role changes? Because, you know, it might not be the role that they wanted, but it's the role that helps your team win games. So how can you help them stay positive and contribute, you know, if it's not the role that they want? And so I think part of that, you know, as a coach is being that motivator, being a little bit of a psychologist, if you will, to help your players out that way as well.
Yeah. You know, it is because you're going to have kids that are going to be disappointed with their role without a doubt. You know, it's if you're not, man, you are a lucky dude or dudette, and enjoy the heck out of this season, because if everybody is happy and understands their role and is good with it, that's great, you know. And you like you said to me, I love the way you say it. You're kind of being a psychologist, and you're spending a lot of time. But that goes back to some of the things that you were talking about, building your relationships. Yeah, I might not like my role, but man, I really appreciate. I don't even really agree with Coach Viss, but it's what he's asking me to do, so I'm going to do it, you know. And so when you have those relationships, you can really do that. Now sometimes you're going to have kids, because you don't give them the role that they want, they don't want to buy into a relationship with you. And you have to prepare yourself for that as well. You know, why is Billy mad at me? Well, you know, why is Billy, yeah, it's just what and there's nothing you can do, you know? And so, hey, and then you move on to other conversations at that point. But I agree with you there, Tony. That's really good. So,
and one of the things I talk about with them too, Marty, is the only reason our relationship is going to change, you know, depending upon their happiness with the role or whatever the case may be, is if you change it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'm going to be the same person day in, day out with you that I've been all the time. My liking of you doesn't really get that impacted by if you're the leading scorer, if you're first person off the bench, or if you're the biggest cheerleader on the bench. You know, just make sure, know your role, embrace your role, and thrive in that.
Yep. Yep. My last thing that I've got here, Tony, sometimes we get so obsessed with the drill work and stuff. At a certain point, now you can't do this on day one, but at a certain point, are you just playing sometimes? Now, when I say, are you just playing, are you doing controlled scrimmage? I'm not saying roll out the ball and just, you know, you just sit on the side for 20 minutes and let the guys or gals go. But are you just playing? Are you working on the things that you need to do in the full court? We can spend a lot of time with footwork drills and ball handling drills and shooting drills. Hey, we still got to play some 5-on-5. And whether that's a, you know, 5-on-5 call the name transition or free throw transition or, you know, stop, score, stop, or score, stop, score, or whatever those controlled scrimmages need to be, you've got to get up and down at certain points. And so drills are great. Drills are awesome. But you also, and sometimes you got kids that look great in drills and they can't do it for you 5-on-5. And then you have kids that don't look great in the drill work, and maybe they're not as fundamentally, you know, as skilled as some other kids that look great in drills. But man, you get them out and you start playing, and those are the kids that are making plays for you. So are you just getting out and playing sometimes? That's my last big one.
Yeah, I think sometimes what we do is we get so wrapped up in drill work that, you know, we forget about the gamers, so to speak. Yeah. Like, you know, they may not look great in some layup drill that you're doing, and they may not look that great, you know, doing whatever, but all of a sudden you start to play a game like, whoa, these guys can hoop. And so sometimes you have to just, you know, push aside the drill work, if you will, and just play. And see who, if the cream rises to the top there.
Mm-hmm.
My last one that I'll throw out here real quick would be this, and this kind of goes back to where I started at, you know, as far as like goals and stuff. But the big thing I would go with as a coach, what's your overall objective for the season? And make sure is your overall objective is what guides your decisions. When you plan a practice, when you interact with a player, when you answer an email, when you are doing an interview with whatever media or whatever the case may be, what is your overall, the team's overall objective for the season? Mm-hmm. And so as you get that in your view, that's going to be your why. That's what's going to guide you. And so that's one thing I would encourage coaches. You get ready to do these practice plans. You get ready to, you know, coach your team. As you get ready to put game plans together, as you get ready to do whatever, what is your team's overall objective? Like you know, there might be more than one. Maybe there's like two or three, but you've got to figure out what is that objective or what are those objectives? Have that so that when you get ready to do what you need to do, that's the thing that guides you.
Mm-hmm. You know, my entire time at Fort Calhoun, I never, and it was so freeing, Tony, I never worried about winning a game. The whole thing was just about building standards, taking steps forward. I knew that's what my object. Now, when the lights got turned on and the referees showed up and the opening tip went up, did I want to win? Absolutely. But it was never the overall objective. It was always about that. Now, there were times, you know, when I was at Scott where I put too much emphasis on the winning and the losing and not as much on the development and different. And I think it bit me in the butt, you know? So it was such a freeing thing because I knew exactly what my objective was going to be. And I really like that, Tony, that, you know, you've got to have that in mind, what you want to accomplish, because that's got to be your North Star. And you've got to come back to that every single day. You have to remind yourself of that before practice every single day, don't you think?
Yes, most definitely. You know, because if you lose your way, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. If you have your way, like this is what I'm doing. Like if your goal is as a coach is to impact young people and help to change lives, that's what guides everything that you do. But if you get caught up in the wins and the losses and this, that, and the other, sometimes you can lose your way and makes for a very miserable experience.
Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska, and every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. Well, Tony, you know who has never, ever lost their way.
Europeans just make great hits.
You bet. They've never lost their way in 40 plus years. Tony, I think it's my turn for trivia. If it's not, it's going to be my turn because
it definitely is.
Yeah. So here is this week's A Pen and a Napkin coaching staff trivia question. Are you ready for it, my friend?
I'm ready to get one wrong. Let's do it.
I think you've got a good chance at this. On Friday, Gino Auriemma tied Tara Vanderveer for most wins in Division I basketball, I think it's men or women's, history, 1,216. This is more specifically for the women's side. This is specifically for the women's side, Tony. How many NCAA women's basketball coaches have over 1,000 victories? I don't need names per se. I'm just looking for a number. How many of them have over 1,000?
Let's go 5.
That is incorrect. You are too low.
Really?
Too low.
Too low. Wow. Well, let's beef it up a little bit. Let's go 8.
You are too high. So by my math, you have a 50-50 shot.
All right. Well, the way that you said too low makes me think that it's going to be 7 rather than 6.
So you're telling me there's a chance. You are incorrect. It was six. It was 6. Here they are. Tara and Gino, 1216 apiece. Pat Summit, 1098. Barbara Stevens did most of her work at Bentley University, which I believe is in Massachusetts. I think it's a Division III school. 1058. C. Vivian Stringer from the University of Iowa and most notably Rutgers, 1055. And then Sylvia Hatchell, mainly from the University of North Carolina, 1,023. Those are the 6 women's basketball coaches with more than 1,000 victories in the NCAA history. So, yes, very, very interesting. In fact, so interesting. One, when they hear that number, they might say,
how about that?
So, we got a lot going on, man. We are knee deep into it, Tony. NBA, men's and women's college basketball. It's go time, man. We will have no shortage of topics to discuss for the next few months here. It's going to be great. Let's start here with the South Carolina women handled North Carolina State the other day. They are rolling 40 in a row dating back to last season. And that was without the Kitts gal who was suspended for an academic situation. And, you know, Don Staley, I you know, they lost Cardoza, but I don't think they're going to be missing too many beats this year.
Well, they're really good. You know, I thought before the year, if you had them and then play like an all-star team from the other ones, would South Carolina be able to beat them? And I don't think they're quite that good. There's not that big of a discrepancy between them. But the Watkins girl wasn't playing early on either. She's recently come back as well. But when you have Watkins and Kitts with what they have at the perimeter spots as well, they're tough. And I think they're the favorite, but I would not say it's a slam dunk. They for sure are going to win the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the game before, a few games before, I think Michigan really pushed them.
Yep.
And Michigan's better than what people think, but Michigan, you know, wasn't a top 10 team. And so I think UConn can give them everything they want. Texas can give them everything they want. And then you that Los Angeles with you, both the Bruins and the Trojans, so UCLA and USC, I think both those teams would be able to hang with them as well. So it's going to be a fun women's season, really high level of basketball.
Yeah. I don't think it was like it was, you know, with some of the folks that we talked, you know, especially at the height of like Pat Summitt and some of Geno's UConn teams, where it's like, it really doesn't matter. You don't have much of a chance. You know, there's a lot more parity in the women's game than there ever has been. You know, I watched Kansas State the other night play against Creighton and handled them very, very easily. And, you know, they're really good. Iowa State's really good. Oklahoma, Maryland, you know, these are really, really good teams, really, really good programs. And so, yeah, South Carolina is the favorite. And until somebody beats them, they are the favorite. But I don't know. And again, I haven't looked at their schedule in depth or anything like that, but I don't think they're going to run the table this year, just because I think that there's just, it's not so much about them. It's about the parity of the, you know, they've got Iowa State, they've got UCLA, they've got Duke, they've got Texas on the schedule, they've got Oklahoma, LSU. I mean, you know, and Staley's not shying away from anybody. They got UConn later on in the year. I mean, they're going to lose. They're going to lose, and they'll probably lose multiple games, in my opinion. But you know, it's they are the team, and until somebody knocks them off, they are the team, so to speak. So, speaking of the team, some of our NBA teams don't have much of the team left here. The walking wounded that is the NBA right now. Just some of the names of injured players. Dame Lillard, Chet Holmgren, who's out for a while. Most of these seem to be fairly, you know, manageable injuries, but you got Chet out for a while. Zion is on the shelf indefinitely with those bad hamstrings. Tyrese Maxey, Ja Morant, Paolo Banchero is going to be out for a while. I mean, he was off to a great start. Scottie Barnes, Kevin Durant's been struggling. Aaron Gordon is out. Jimmy Butler. DeJounte Murray broke a finger on opening night. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. So it's just, what do you think it is, Tony?
You know, it's one of those things, I think, where going to the preseason, I see the NBA kind of going the route of the NFL and not playing their guys a lot in the preseason because mm-hmm. they don't want situations like this to happen. But you're not coming in and getting in shape like what they were. And so you're getting, you know, hamstring issues and different things where, you know, they have to start to take a little bit better care of themselves going into it than maybe than what they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing too, it's an 82 game season. You know, that's a lot of games. And again, we're just started. We're roughly about 15 games in for each team. But I don't know, just that grind of playing a handful of times each week is tough on the body. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I think there's got to be a little bit of give and take there. Could you cut the season down some? You know, and different things that go along with that. But it's an interesting thing to take a look at as far as, but the roster you were reading, you might win some games with those guys.
You got some dudes. And some of them are freak injuries. Like, you know, Chet got caught in midair and came down and just landed awkwardly, you know. How much of it do you think is, we're kind of, this is the generation and the players to follow that have been playing AAU since they were, you know, in kindergarten, first grade. You know, they're playing a lot more basketball than you and I played a lot of basketball, but that was us going down to the school blacktop and putting up shots with friends and playing some pickup there and different things like that. Yes, the travel is better. Yes, the mechanic, we know more about the human body than we ever have before and how to rest and how to recharge it. But yet we keep getting these soft tissue injuries, these, you know, like I said, with Zion, with the hamstrings, with, Paolo with the, I think it was the oblique that he hurt, you know, different things like that. You know, do you think the human body only has so much to give? And yes, guys are playing longer, but just, you know, and maybe this is just kind of a freak thing that's happening right now, but do you think that might be part of it?
Yeah, like you said, the soft tissue stuff, the overuse. I mean, you see more orthopedic surgeries in today's day and age than you ever did with us growing up. And I think it's just the fact that they play, you know, once you get through the NBA season and then some of the other things, they play so many games. And like you said, there's only so many reps that the human body has in it before it breaks down and needs surgery and then has to heal.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The young superstar, Victor Wembanyama, I think the last time we talked, he had the 5x5 game.
It was a trivia question.
Yes, it was. And then he goes off and he is the fourth youngest player in the history of the league to score 50 points in a game. Now, you know, he's been shooting it like crazy. You know, a lot of people were criticizing him because he was he's been taking a lot of threes. A lot of people want to see him spend more time around the basket. He sees himself kind of more as a 7'6" Kevin Durant, more than a 7'6" Kareem Abdul-Jabbar type of player. But the dude he's an alien, man. He's an alien. And I think he's highly competitive, and he is just, I think in 15 years, if he stays healthy, we're going to look back at this guy and just go, man, he was the first of X amount of guys that are, you know, maybe not like him, but these unicorns just keep rolling off the assembly line.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be if you were, you know, 6'8", 6'9", or taller, you always play with your back to the basket. Mm-hmm. And then obviously over the last, you know, decade, two decades, that mold has been broken. And you see guys like Kevin Durant outside shooting jump shots and shooting pull-ups and stuff like that. And like you mentioned, Marty, he didn't pattern his game after Kareem or any of the great back to the basket post guys. He patterned his game after Kevin Durant, you know, and there's probably some, you know, relevance to what they're saying about, hey, you know, maybe you should tweak a few things here and there and not just be this, you know, jump shooter and do a high volume of jump shots. There's probably something to that. But at the same time, you know, if people try to pigeonhole a Caitlin Clark or a Steph Curry to do it the way they used to do it 20, 30, 40 years ago, man, we would miss a great artist. Yeah. And so, like you said, I think we have to be careful not to do that to Victor. I mean, man, he's good. And like you said, we're going to sit back and go, what a special player that just kind of broke the mold and just continues to change and help the game get to even a better place.
Yep. Speaking of taking the game to a better place, and we talked about the young superstar. Now we're going to talk about the old superstar, the senior citizen. LeBron James continues to defy Father Time. Father Time's like, I'm throwing some punches here, and the dude won't go down. Three straight triple doubles at age 39. I think it was like Chris Vernon on The Mismatch or something like that. He's had more triple doubles after turning 39 than like John Stockton had his entire career or something. Some crazy number like that. And Chris Vernon just rolled it all out. I forget what he all threw out there, but just amazing. That's all you can say. Whether love him or hate him, it's amazing. You know,
it's incredible. I mean, when people want to do the whole Michael Jordan versus LeBron debate, you know, one of the things I always ask them, are we talking peak or are we talking career? Yeah. Because if we're talking peak, we can have a conversation, because I think that that's a good conversation. If you're talking career, it's not close. LeBron has had a better career than anybody that's played this game. He ended at 18 at a high level.
Yep.
And at 39, it'll be 40 soon, he is still playing at an incredibly high level. Last time I checked, that's over 20 years of doing what he's doing. It is insane what he's doing. And I think sometimes people, because of whatever thing they want to nitpick about him, they just get wrapped up in these, you know, in the minutia, and they're missing the greatness that is LeBron James.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just sit there, and I think you're right, Tony. And I, you know, we're both teachers. And by the way, your math was correct. It has been over 20 years. Just to let you know. Yeah, yeah. So
I'm a little nervous for a sec.
Yeah, you kind of held your breath there a little bit. So holded your breath. I ain't got no good English there. So, he just unbelievable. Just what he's done is you know, my oldest especially. You know, he's LeBron, he's team LeBron over team Jordan, and that's fine. You know, that's his generation. I've told it, LeBron's had the greatest career ever. If you ask me to pick one game and I got to have a guy to win one game for me, I want MJ. You know, that's just that's just me, you know. But it's been absolutely unbelievable what he's done, and to have three straight triple doubles at that age, there's no not a whole lot more you can say other than unbelievable. Unbelievable. So the latest phenom, the one that we haven't seen yet, we're starting to see him on the big stage here. I got a chance to watch Cooper Flagg for the first time in extended minutes against Kentucky. Tony, what have you thought of Mr. Flagg here? As if you've had a chance to watch him play here in his first couple of games.
It's been really interesting because Cooper can play pretty much any position on the floor. I know you referred to that Kentucky game earlier. There was a handful of times, Marty, he played point and initiated defense. And then late in the game, when they're at winning time and trying to make plays, it's basically throw it to Cooper at the nail and get the heck out of the way.
Yep.
And, you know, and there's at least two other lottery picks on that team. And so he's going to be a really, really good one. And like your Christian Leitners, like your Danny Ferry, like your J.J. Redick and Cherokee Parks, he's going to be the next hated Duke player by basically the rest of the college basketball fandom.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed. Can basically play at minimum 1 through 4. Kind of got the point forward type of stuff. Competitive is all get out, athletic, springy, long, competes every play. I'm a believer. I am firmly picking up, as Bill Simmons would say, I'm picking up some stock in Cooper Flagg Island. I'm buying real estate on Flagg Island. I am putting down my flag for Cooper, if you will. He is the real deal, and I'm looking forward to watching him play on down the line. And I think they're going to be awfully tough to beat by the end of the year. I think they've got a really, really talented team. They got that 7'2" center that is just crazy athletic as well, blocks a bunch of shots. They got a couple kids. They got a couple of really nice guards. They got a really good point guard. They got a really good shooting guard. I know nobody's ever going to say, oh, Duke, feel bad for that. Con Kneipel, I really liked watching him against Kentucky. I think he's going to be, he didn't shoot it well that night, but I think he's going to be really, really good for him. I think they've just got a really, really good, deep, balanced team. And he's going to, Flagg's going to be kind of the leader, the tent pole of this particular team this year for John Shire.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be the alpha on that team. I don't know if I would say their Final Four level yet, but with a young team like that, man, they've got a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Tony, I was dabbling. I was thinking. I had 2.5 hours to drive back from Sioux Falls today. You know, we're kind of out of the Arby's business because we're not going to see many contracts signed here, but we've got our who's up, who's down segment to wrap up this week's pod. And I was like, well, what could we use for that? What could we use? And it finally dawned on me right before we start. Are you ready, sir, for who's up, who's down? All right. And here's what we're doing here. Hope you like it. Well, we're moving on now. Little George That's Jefferson good. For us.
Yeah, this is good.
Yes. So
good work, Wheezy.
great stuff. We used to watch that as kids, reruns on TBS while we were eating supper. And I thought that'd be a good one here.
That is outstanding.
Yeah. Yes. And it counts. So who's up for you, Mr. Viss?
I think you got to go with Giannis. He had 59 the other night against the Pistons. And I believe it was a loss, but he's playing at a really high level. Unfortunately, there's been some injuries and we've had some guys not having great seasons. And eventually, does Giannis begin to complain and want to go elsewhere? But man, he's putting up some impressive numbers.
Yeah, that's, a lot of scuttlebutt about where, the Sixers, the Bucks, they have struggled coming out of the gate, but the Sixers haven't had people. The Bucks have had people, and they're still not playing what you would call great basketball by any stretch of the imagination. And I think that's the difference between the two. But Giannis individually has just been absolutely awesome. It's still fairly early in the season. It's Doc Rivers is dealing the same thing that we deal with as high school coaches. You know, when do you push the panic button? What do you do for, changes? Do you need to? How long do you stay with it? The art of coaching, and we all struggle with it. So, my up, Tony. Just locally, just down the road here, Mr. Ryan Kalkbrenner from Creighton University. His field goal percentage has finally slipped here. At one point, he was shooting 92%. He has slipped to, let me see here. Where is Mr. Kalkbrenner at? I gotta give Coach Mack a call. He is down to 89% from the field. 41 for 46. He started out the season with, and the last couple of games, his minutes have been limited, because they've just, kicked the snot out of their opponents. Got a chance to watch Craig Doty's team practice before they played, Creighton the other night. And, first thing, they worked at trying to, they were putting in schemes to stop me. He still ended up with 16, but he started off with the 49 burger against UT Rio Grande Valley and just been really, really efficient. And just, he's improved a ton over the 4 or 5 years that he's been at Creighton. And, got a chance to be the second 4-time Big East Defensive Player of the Year. The only other one to do it 4 times, Patrick Ewing. Yes. So, yeah, he wasn't too bad. So that's my up for this week, Tony.
Okay. What about your down?
My down, the New Orleans Pelicans. That is my down. When I wrote this down earlier in the week, they were 3-9. I am checking real quick here. They are now 4-10. Now, some of that is injury. Zion, CJ McCollum, DeJounte Murray, Jordan Hawkins, all out. But this was also kind of a flawed roster. And we talked about it in our predictions. This is a team that you could see winning 50 games. This is a team you could see winning 35 games. They didn't really have a pure center to put out there. And, their season might be kind of over before it even started, Tony. And that's kind of who I'm down on this week.
And oftentimes I was like, I didn't know who to go with on this one. And so I don't think I'll probably ever get to do this one again. So I decided I'm gonna jump on the unicorn here, and I'm going to go Eric Spoelstra on this one. I don't know if you saw this the other night.
I think I know where you're going to go with it. Yep.
They were playing. The other team had a shot to tie it, and he called a timeout. And they were playing the Pistons, yep. And they did not have a timeout because one of the thing, Jalen Rose was at the game. Obviously, Chris Webber's teammate. Chris did something similar in a national championship game. But that's who I would go with on my down. Like I said, unicorn, probably never going to happen again. Spoelstra, one of the all-time great coaches in the NBA, but that would be my down this week.
Yeah, something happened and somebody got beat on a defensive rotation and he got pissed off and he tried to call a timeout and he went on the floor. And they had to call the T on him for doing that. So, should be. So that's we'll probably never see that happen again. You're right, Tony. Well, we will probably never see Spoelstra make that kind of mental error again. So episode number 108 in the books here. Questions to answer early in the season. A lot of great stuff here. Tony, anything to wrap it up?
You know, just put some thought into it. I mean, one of those things with questions, you know, is take some time, put some thought into it as you go into the season and have as many, because there's going to come things that you're going to be unplanned. But just make sure you've thought through these things and put yourself in the best position you can to have a great season with your teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and every day there's certain questions you have to ask yourself. Start out the season, these are things you should be thinking about. And, you know, just keep looking at yourself in the mirror. And I think, you know, one of the things I didn't add in, but I believe I said it a week or two ago, what does my team need from me today? What does the program need from me today? And I think that's something you start off your day with when you start thinking about your team, which a lot of us do right when we wake up in the morning. What does my team need from me? And these are a lot of things that you also need to ask along with that question. And those are questions that Tony needs to start asking of himself, you know, in about 11 hours, well, 10 hours when he wakes up here to go to school tomorrow. Right, Tony?
Especially.
Yeah.
And hopefully some of that legwork has been done. But like we said, it's anytime you're dealing with high schoolers and teams and stuff, there's some things that are going to happen that you may not have thought about yet.
Yep. Well, great episode number 108. You know, thanks for being patient with us as we kind of flip the calendar here. We've got a great interview that we'll be releasing on Thursday this week. I got some really, really good stuff lined up here for interview pods over the next few weeks. So really excited for that. Hope, you know, it's the most, for some people, the most wonderful time of the year is football bowl season, college football bowl season. For me, for Tony, for a lot of other people, this is the most wonderful time of the year. So hope you've enjoyed this week's coaching staff podcast. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.